The first step in getting closer to God is to realize that you need to or that you want to. And the second step in getting closer to God is to realize that it's possible. I want to encourage you to check out my book, Getting Closer to God, Anthologies from the Forefront Trilogy, Book 2. I think this will really be helpful to you in your pursuit of the Lord and help you understand what I learned over the first 30 plus years of my life as a believer, as a minister, and as a missionary in a lot of the countries of the earth. Check it out. Anthologies from the Forefront, Book 2, Getting Closer to God. It's on Amazon.
Welcome to From the Forefront, an FX Missions podcast with your host, Scott McClelland. Far and wide, and sometimes here at home, these bold and courageous souls that answer the call to missions have a steely mettle that insists pioneering be part of their daily routine. Let's gather today and learn from those on the forefront. Here's Scott.
Hi, Scott McClelland here for your FX Missions From the Forefront podcast. Thanks for being with us. If you know of someone who's interested in missions, maybe getting the courage up to go, I want to encourage you to share this podcast and others like it with them, because our intent is to encourage missions and missionaries in every way. Thank you for joining us. Pretty excited today to be joined by DJ and Robin and Gaia. DJ, Robin?
Yes.
Greetings. Hey. How are y'all doing? You've already told me how you're doing. And so I'm asking you again for the benefit of everyone else.
Yeah, we're doing great. And, you know, we're excited to be here with you today and to share a little bit about who we are and what the Lord's been doing in our lives. Thank you for having us.
Yes. Well, you're most welcome. Of course, we met, I would say, in fairly recent months, in the great white north, I guess you would have to call it that. I guess it's white by now, right? When we were there, it was yet green.
Things are kind of turning brown first. We'll get white pretty soon.
Okay. Very, very cool. Well, both of you, of course, I met when I was in the Anchorage area of Alaska, Palmer more specifically. We were up visiting some folks with the Lovings, I guess it is, that we have been cultivating some friendship with. And I, of course, know you guys are friends there as well. So was very excited, you know, to meet you guys. Of course, you've got native people roots. I don't know how to say that in the right way. DJ, forgive me.
No, that's fine. Yeah. I'm Inuit Ali with Swedish and a little German thrown in there. So my dad is from Nelson Island. The community he's from is called Tinunik, and it's a Yupik Eskimo region. We like to think of ourselves Yupik. Yep. We're the Southerners of the Eskimo world. My mom is actually from Naknek in Bristol Bay, and that's the Aleut side of my heritage.
Okay. Wow. Well, forgive me for my pronunciations in advance. I've got to say that. Robin, you're a little bit of the paler variety, if I remember right.
Yep.
Tell me about your native roots. Where do your roots go back to?
Oh, well, I think God has a sense of humor when he marries an Italian and a Yupik. They're both pretty strong-headed personalities and cultures. So, yeah, we always tease our kids. We told them they didn't have any hope. They were going to be pretty independent people.
Hey, in today's world, you could do worse, I could say, raising independent and strong children. And if I remember right, it's not just a few.
No, we have six kids. Our oldest is 22, going to be 22, and our youngest is 12.
Yeah, so. Wow. Four girls, two boys in that order.
Yeah.
Man, that is it. Wow.
Yeah. 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 For the parents out there who are on their journey in parenthood and they have girls or they have boys, they are night and day different. And having four girls, we thought we knew it all. And our first son, boy.
It was like being a brand new parent.
Yeah. It was awesome. It was so cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, we have great kids and we're excited.
Four girls in that order and then two boys at the end.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we're talking about 10, 11 years, right?
Yeah, it was 9 years. I think Annie was nine when I had Lewis. So, yeah. We say at the end, but really, you know, we had them all pretty close.
Yeah, I'm saying. You guys, I mean, good job, parents. That is a tight rotation. I got to say, very respectable rotation. Not too many people get it quite that snug. But hey, I imagine it's a parade and a zoo and a lot of other things on a daily basis. Of course, your kids are getting a little bit bigger now, so maybe some of those responsibilities are not what they once were. But wow, you guys are earning a medal.
Yeah, we're just following tradition. That's all. My dad had, he's one of 12, and my grandmother is one of 12. So
you're halfway there, DJ. Keep going.
There's no competitions here. We've decided we're good.
Yeah, we stopped the race. Stop the race. Yes. Well, wow. Well, I'm excited to know about you and your family. It was fascinating to meet you and also, you know, to find out that they talk, that there's a good bit of the Yupik culture talks nonverbally, like I had also encountered in Central America, which I thought was so cool. I'm going to remember the sustained eyebrow raise in the interest of surprise. I'm never going to forget that, DJ. Thank you.
I will admit that I'm a little confused right now because I can't see your face.
Well, that was so cool to me. You know, just cultures are beautiful, and the Lord knows what he's doing in depositing himself in each of the cultures. So I just am fascinated by it. So thank you. Now, let's dig in a little bit, if we can, to your ministry, missions background, how you met the Lord, and just get to know a little bit more about how you got on the road you're on right now.
Sure. You know, I tell you, where we are right now by no means is where we thought we would be, you know, 20 some years ago. And, you know, the Lord is amazing and wonderful in all the things that he does. But when it comes to you as an individual personally, what's amazing to me is that my story might be different from somebody else's, but the thing that we have in common is that God sees us through all of those things. So for our story, you know, our mission actually revolves a little bit around our story. But for me personally, it was coming to realize that there really isn't anything that I can do to remove myself from God in the sense of how he sees me, how he loves me. But 20 years ago, that's not what I believed. You know, yeah. I had really, really poor choices with how I was living my life, you know, alcohol, partying, all those kinds of things. And then throw a relationship into there. And I made a train wreck of my wife and I's early relationship before we were married, to the point where the things that I was hearing in my head was, you know, you're a monster. There's nobody like you. You can't be forgiven for the things that you've done. And I truly believe those things. And a lot of those lies really drove a number of the choices that I made, sadly. But, you know, God moves in ways that we don't expect. Going back a little bit further, you know, I can recognize that God's hand was in my life and he was expressing himself to me, even though I didn't recognize it fully to begin with. And my story goes back to when I was in high school, where as a freshman in high school, I met a young man. His name was Wesley, and he was a believer. You know, he was in my grade. And I remember him inviting me to church, you know, asking me to just to hang out and be a friend. And, you know, for me, sitting in the church pew with him, you know, on a Sunday, and I went to a couple of the youth events with him. You know, the cool thing that I thought I'd do is, you know, draw skeletons and crazy stuff like middle fingers and profanity and that sort of thing. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just, you know, this kid that didn't know who God was, didn't know who Jesus was. But I remember Wesley just loving on me, you know, and just sharing his joy, the joy that the Lord gave him and his experiences. And there was a friendship there that was genuine. A few short months after getting to know him fairly well, I would move from the community and to another region. And I can think back on the number of times where I would remember Wesley, because what he carried and what he had, it was something that I desired. You know, I came from a broken family. My parents separated when I was 10 years old. You know, so relationship was something that was always really, I was really keenly aware of relationships because I desired to have a relationship more than anything. So, you know, fast forwarding again to this place of despair where I thought there was no way that I could be forgiven for the choices that I had made and the actions that I had done, the Lord would meet me again. And it was actually through my wife. She had accepted the Lord. And in the process of her accepting the Lord, now, mind you, you know, we had gone through already a number of years as boyfriend and girlfriend making poor choices.
Should give a little context. I was 15 and he was 19 when we met. And so this was about 4 years later. I think I was almost 18, 19 at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm, so about 4 years of a relationship has gone by. And I would say the relationship was done in all the wrong ways, you know, but what happened though, is when she accepted the Lord, something radical changed that I witnessed in my wife or my girlfriend at the time, right? She was making choices that were completely alien to what I was used to. But they were choices that I recognized were good choices for her and for me. And,
right.
And it came to a head where she forgave me for the things that I had done against her, you know? And in that moment, it was beautiful because I recognized that this wasn't just Robin forgiving me, but this was God forgiving me. And wow. I gave my life to the Lord. And, wow. you know, and so, you know, just a brief timeline. And in respect to, you know, I'm a lot older now, but in that moment then, you know, my world changed. It was, it was an amazing, literally miraculous thing. And let Robin share a little bit about her experience.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I didn't grow up in a Christian home like DJ. I think DJ had some Catholic, a little bit of Catholic influence early on. And my mom was divorced when I was very young. And we moved to Alaska from Washington. Literally, my mom wanted to go as far away as possible, I think, from where my dad was. And so we ended up out in a village on the west coast of Alaska. And she met my stepdad not too long later. And he was, at the time, an illegal immigrant to the country. And so they eventually got married. And he was really a gift to me, though. I had a lot of, there was some abuse, some sexual abuse in between the move and just some different stuff that had happened at the time. And it really shaped me. There's a lot of brokenness there, that introduction of sexual things, like, you know, 5, 6 years old. And so it was kind of interesting. And so there was always like a lot of crushes, and I actually cringe when people are like, oh, does so-and-so have a crush? And I'm like, oh, don't go there. I just, you know, there's an innocence that's lost from children in those processes. Right. And anyway, I really struggled with that. And so DJ and I, when he talks about this 4 years of doing everything wrong, it was like, we were extreme. We were obsessed. And, you know, we knew we were doing wrong things, but we also didn't have really a moral, other than disobeying our parents, there wasn't necessarily a moral compass in there. You know, like,
right.
you know you're doing right. something wrong, but you don't actually think of your sin as being against God, and you have no real perspective of who God is and what his love means. And so we were really looking for our identity in one another. I know I was, and I met DJ so young, you know, that he really right. figures into all of my walk with the Lord. And then funny thing is my mom, she started to homeschool me when I think it was in sixth, seventh grade. And it was funny, this town I was in, you know, there's only about maybe 1,100 people in the winter, and there were not very many homeschoolers, and we were not Christian. And so to be in the late 80s, early 90s homeschooled in the middle of nowhere, Alaska, quite hysterical, actually. And more funny was that the curriculum that there was is, it was all Christian. So here I was in my room on the long winter nights trying to do all my schoolwork, and my mom worked full time. So it really was very self-directed. And I'm reading these black and white Alpha Omega books and like mocking. I actually remember coming out to my mom and mocking this passage that talked about thanking God for scientists. I was so offended by this whole idea of God. And I remember going out to her and I was like, what are you making me read? Like, what is this? And, you know, I really had no context for Christianity or the Lord or creation or anything. And so then what ended up happening is we only had a King James Bible in our house, and I had to look up verses all the time for my classes I was taking. I had no idea what it was saying, like literally no idea. It was like a Greek text, you know, this old English that it was written in. And then I had to read Hamlet. I think when I was 16, I read Hamlet, but I had a Hamlet version that had the modern English next to the Shakespearean English, which come to find out, that's actually the same as the King James version. It's so similar. After I read Hamlet, when I was reading my verses, it was like the Rosetta Stone for the Bible. It was the funniest thing. And at that time, I always knew there was more, but I didn't. I just didn't know what it was. And so I had actually read, I was a huge reader. I had read like Course of Miracles. I had read about Taoism. I had read so many religious texts actually by the time I was 16. And so when I could finally understand the Bible, I remember I did nothing for 3 days except to read the Gospels. And I knew, and I can look back, it could make me cry. Like I knew in that moment that Jesus was who I was looking for, but I had no idea how to accept him. I had no idea. I didn't know any of the stuff. Like literally, it's really funny. Here I am in America in the early 90s, and I have no idea how to accept the Lord. That's kind of ironic, you know?
Yeah.
And so anyway, I know at that time that in my heart, like as much as I could, I gave my heart to him, but I had DJ. So we were the most gigantic stumbling blocks for one another. Mm. And it wasn't until I had actually moved out after graduating. We were living together in Anchorage, and then we went back home separate, like living in separate places back home in Naknek.
Yeah.
That I remember just that tug with the Lord, just thinking, I can't live without Jesus. And I actually got baptized when we lived together. We were really those people that they're like, they should never be together. You know, those couples you see. That was us. Like we were the most unlikely of the unlikelies to have a marriage that worked or to have productive, fruitful lives. So God is amazing. But I went home and had that moment with the Lord where I was like, I cannot live without you. And if I never see DJ again, then I will trust you. And then DJ, it was crazy. It was like, I was free to love the Lord and love DJ like I had never been able to, because we were always trying to take what we needed from one another. And we hated each other. It was weird that we were so obsessed because we really were not nice to one another. And then DJ had his own. I mean, it was funny because God kept us together, and yet we had completely individual salvation experiences with the Lord.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of that. It's really funny because that's a huge part of our story, but not even the story.
that's just
getting our foot in the door, right? Like we had a lot of baggage to unpack.
Wow. The preamble. That's the preamble, everyone. Wow. Well, you know, the faithfulness of the Lord to us in whatever wayward place that we're in is, I think, something that we can take comfort in and strength in. You know, the Lord, it's the goodness of God that leads man to repentance. And he was, you know, demonstrating his goodness to you in ways maybe you couldn't recognize on both sides, and also effectively leading you to himself. So, hey, what does it say? All's well that ends well. But hey, we're still in the story. That part of the story concluded well. You got married and you had the tightest rotation of children I've heard about recently. But hey, anyways, so thank God for what he did. Thank God for his kindness and generosity to all of us, including you guys. So did you guys feel immediately after kind of getting through that you were interested in things like missions and ministry? Or I know you were like, you start on Deadliest Catch for like 3 seasons. So, okay.
It feels that way.
You guys were fishers. I know that. And that narrow window of time when you can catch all the salmon known to man. You worked way too hard. We talked about some of those stories, but when did you start feeling like you had a desire for missions or ministry or that kind of thing?
So for me, honestly, it was like immediately when I accepted the Lord, I really wanted to go to China. And I feel like my stepdad, who, you know, did become a citizen and all of those things, but he was a merchant seaman. So I grew up on stories just from all around the world. And although he wasn't a Christian, like how we would think of that, he just introduced me just to so many cultures. And so when I told DJ, I was like, wow, we should go and do missions. And DJ was like, what'd you say?
That's crazy. Why would we ever go to China? I mean, I think that's pretty much how I said it.
Yeah. He shut that down.
Right. Yeah. Now. It seemed idiotic to me. I had no idea about missions. I had no idea about missionaries for that matter. I had no clue. It just was really scary sounding. And, you know,
this is also the man though that I know you met him. You've met him post much transformation by Jesus, but we didn't have anyone over. You're kind of a hermit.
Yeah.
Very
much a hermit.
And wouldn't talk to people. Like what you experienced was not DJ back then. Wow. So in my heart, like that was devastating for me, but I felt like if God was going to send us on mission, he'd tell both of us, right? Like it's not going to just tell us.
Well, and for me, you know, the calling towards missions really didn't start for another 6 to 7 years. And it was through a miraculous healing. God healed my back. And at the time, I firmly didn't believe that miracles could happen. I didn't think that the giftings of the Spirit were possible. I thought that was all, you know, apostle stuff way back in the day. And that anything like that happened today was a hoax. And, well,
like I was pretty sure people were getting paid off in the audience.
I was pretty sure in that moment that that's what was happening. And then nobody paid me. But Jesus did. He healed my back. And in those, I think it actually might have even been that same day, I felt the Lord calling us towards missions. And it was both in Alaska and in Korea. Mm. Both things seemed way out of my wheelhouse. Still kind of scary for me, you know. But in the process of God bringing us to a place where we were able to do missions, it really was probably, I would say,
like
12 year process.
Yeah, it was not overnight. We had some work to do.
We did. And
right.
That not to discourage people, but to encourage people, because in that 12-year time, roughly from, and I'm talking like from us getting married to the place where we felt we were able to give away, you know, we would like to say that we accepted the Lord and everything was bells and whistles and wonderful, you know, but that was just our stepping point, you know, into walking with God. And in the process, you know, we had baggage that we were carrying with us that God was asking us to remove and to take off. And in that period of time, there was a lot of things that God was working on us.
Yeah.
I've asked the Lord a lot of times too, like, God, why did you tell us so early? You know, I mean, we were certainly not ready to go into missions, but he just put this dream in our heart. And sometimes I think through really some of our darkest moments where we didn't know if we'd stay married or even, you know, I was suicidal in the midst of that. I think DJ had episodes of that. I mean, it got really dark before it got light. And we, I think sometimes like I would remember that calling, and it's funny because it was such a tangible, I don't know, it's God just literally like dropped it into our hearts in such a tangible way that I think it was part of the hope that he knew it would drive us, you know, as humans, as a couple. And I think we remembered those promises when it seemed so impossible. And I actually think he used that as part of our motivation in the midst of our healing, that even our healing wasn't just for us, you know, like what we were walking through, he would redeem and actually would be a gift to other families.
You know, and that brings us to a place where, you know, years down the road, we as a husband and wife began to walk closer together as a husband and wife, you know, with the Lord. He started to really unpackage that hope that he was carrying for us. So that we could see it for others. And when it comes to missions, as far as our family missions, that really is the backbone of our calling, at least at this time.
Yeah.
Is to take a story of hope from a story that seems so unlikely, right? Yeah. Impossible.
Yeah.
But he changed it to something that's just beautiful and hope-filled. So he's taken that and enabled us to be able to have a voice through our testimony of what he's done so that we could bring hope to others. And that, like I said, that is the backbone of our ministry and what God has been calling us into.
Wow. I've got to say, and we're going to run out of runway here pretty soon, but this is going to be the preamble. The main course is coming yet. We're going to have to record again because I know there's a number of things that you guys, you know, doors you came up to and went through that got you entering into and to a more, you know, stepping more into some actual missions activity. I want to get back and talk to you guys about some of those things we talked about when I was with you. I don't think we'll have time to record it right now, but I want to say the hope-filled aspect that you're sharing is very powerful. You know, to me, the Lord takes pleasure, I think, in taking people who are like world-class messy and doing what only he can do. And that, to me, is such an expression of hope to the people who are in a mess. And I know you've encountered a good bit of that in your journeys. And I want to get into some of those journeys, but I think we'll have to record on a second session. Would you like to round it out for us here as we're coming to a conclusion on this particular recording? We're going to get into some of those river things and some of those things that led you up to the river, adventures that you've had, you and your family. But I think we're gonna save that for its own session. What would you like to round it out with here?
I think going into just closing this up, I want to share Philippians 4:4-10 with the audience. It's a scripture that's talking about giving all things to God. And it really doesn't matter what you're giving to him, you know, whether it's your joy or whether it's your pain, but it's instructing us to talk with him and to give those things to him. And it rounds out, that verse rounds out with the promise that he brings us peace. And, you know, we just described some crazy stuff, you know, that happened in our marriage, but we also described hopeful things that we now rest in. And I just want to leave the audience with that.
And I think I would add to, I know, like, it's funny how we want to get to the mission. It's a good parallel of our life, but without the preparation that God did, we actually would have had nothing to give. And so, you know, the meat of where we walk through those hard places with the Lord is actually where we get what we offer to people, the hope that we offer.
Wow. Very, very true. I'm thankful for that redemptive element that's in the Lord, you know, he turns it for good and not just for our good. You know, he turns it for the good of those that we come in contact with or in similar situations or who can relate to where we've been. Powerful, powerful. Yeah. Thank y'all for that. Well, I've got to say this in closing and I'll wrap us up here. You two are among the most interesting people that I have personally met. And I've met a few. So I'm learning UPIC phrases, right? No, but if I was learning UPIC phrases, could you share just a few phrases or maybe greetings, departure greetings or something, DJ, in UPIC so that we can kind of relate to that?
Well, I would say that in parting, we would say Bucha. And it's a parting that says simply, stay as you are. And it's a blessing because what you're saying is you recognize you like the person that you're saying goodbye to, you know, and you're blessing them to say, stay as you are, stay the person that, you know, that's in front of me now, you know, and as ambassadors of Bucha.
Bucha. Okay. Bucha. Well, thank you for that. And I still remember Find Me Where I Am, but I don't remember the UPIC. I don't remember the UPIC expression for Find Me Where I Am, but you're going to find me where I am in our next recording. And I'll
share more words then.
We'll set aside more time next time, and maybe we'll capture a couple of sessions so that we can get more deeper into the story. Sorry, my time's somewhat limited right now, but I thank you guys for being with me. If someone wanted to know more about the Angaic family or get in contact with you, is there an email? Where would we send them?
Through email?
Right now.
djandrobin@gmail.com.
Hey, you guys should look into that. Batmanandrobin.com. djandrobin.com. I'm telling you, you give me joy. That's what I'm saying. So thanks for being with us. Thanks for going. Even though we're just getting started in the story, when we come back in the next episode, we'll unpack a little bit some of your family missions, things you've done, things you've come in contact with, maybe a little bit about interior life in Alaska, what you've seen. It's a mystery to so many of us who are down in the thawed parts of the United States, but what a blessing you guys are. Thank you for who you are in God and for your time and friendship. I look forward to doubling back with you. Again, that is DJ and Robin, traditional spelling on Robin, R-O-B-I-N, I'm taking it.
Yes.
Yeah.
@gmail.com.
@gmail.com. Excellent. I am Scott McClellan, and this is your FX Missions From the Forefront podcast. If you'd like to contact me or us, please do so at fxmissions.com.
You've been listening to From the Forefront, hosted by FX Missions' Scott McClellan. If you've enjoyed this episode and you'd like more information on today's guest, please go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/FX Missions. Please rate our show on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider. If you know someone who should be a guest on our podcast, we're currently reviewing candidates for upcoming episodes. Please submit their name, affiliation, and an essay of why their story needs to be told to info@fxmissions.com. And of course, you can always follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our website at fxmissions.com. From Scott McClelland and the whole team here at FX Missions, thanks for listening. Till next time, have a great day.